James chapter 2, 14 through 26, and this is part two of what we were looking at last week, in that authentic faith is an active faith. So last week we looked closely at a fake faith. You know, what are the characteristics of a fake faith? Well, one, it doesn't save. So someone that has a fake faith, it's not going to do anything towards your salvation. Fake faith doesn't sacrifice. It's more interested in comfort or in status. Fake faith doesn't survive. And James kind of sums it up, and he says, you know, oh, foolish person, do I need to show you that this type of faith is useless? So those are characteristics of a fake faith. Then we looked at the first characteristic of an authentic faith last week, is that it is a believing faith. There is a choice to believe. And we saw the examples of Abraham and Rahab. As we think about authentic faith being a believing faith, and then we even introduced this last week, that it is an active faith. Even in our normal day-to-day life, there's many things that we recognize, many different sectors that we recognize the difference between just a title and having responsibility and being active in that. Think with me about sports, for example. Of course, many of you watch some of the World Series games, and Friday, much of Metro Atlanta was affected by the parade from the Braves coming back from the World Series. Schools were closed in Cobb County. Our kids' schools were closed as well on Friday, and big parade and all this event, because there were so many guys who were part of the roster of the Braves baseball team, showed up to the training and went to all the practices and showed up at the games and did their best because they were part of the team. Caleb Raines, that many of you know, he is part of the basketball team at Truett McConnell University. So he can't just decide, well, I don't really feel like playing basketball today. I think I'd rather sleep in a little bit, or, you know, I'd like to spend some more time with my girlfriend, you know, Kylie. No, he is part of the team. So he's expected to show up for practice. He's expected, even before practice begins, to do his summer workouts. And my coach would assign us years ago to, you know, do so many free throws and on our own. So all these things are a part of someone who is on the team. Our next door neighbors are part of the military, and one of our neighbors there is on active duty. So we immediately know that if someone says, yeah, I am on active duty, that means they are full-time in the service. So many of their individual and many of their even family decisions will be made around the military and their active duty service. Can be called upon at any time. They can be deployed around the world at any given moment because they are part of an active duty. Now, we know we're familiar with those who are in the reserves or maybe in the National Guard. But we know that active duty, boy, they are all in. And I pray that as Christians, we won't be just maybe, you know, reservist Christians. Maybe a weekend a month, we go train, you know, as reservist Christians. And every once in a while, yeah, we'll kind of dabble and we'll kind of do some stuff. And not to minimize reservists in the military, they serve a very important role. But in Christianity, God wants us to be on active duty. We even think we're in a school setting here, and you look oftentimes on a website, and it'll show staff and faculty. It'll have all the pictures, and it'll have their titles. Staff and faculty means that they are responsible to show up to school. They're responsible to perform their duties, but also their privileges of being part of the staff and faculty of a school. They're not substitute teachers. It's not just an adjunct faculty. And once again, may we as Christians not just think of ourselves as, well, you know, when needed, I'll kind of like plug in maybe for a little bit. But think of yourself, no, I'm part of the staff and faculty of God's family. In Acts 11, Christians, we were called Christians first in Acts 11 at Antioch. That wasn't always the term that we were referred to. In fact, it's sometimes that some of the commentators think that it may have been more of a derogatory term. Greeks had their way of kind of nicknaming different, you know, people and groups. And so it's very possible that that started out as a kind of a derogatory term that the Greeks chose to describe those who were, as Paul put it earlier, of the way. or of the Nazarite. And it gives the idea of being Christ followers or of the party of Christ. Christianos is the idea in the Greek terms. So Christians. We are called Christians, and so that means that we are of the party of Jesus Christ. We are Christ followers. It's not the idea of a Christ observer. It's not the idea of a Christ, you know, that just kind of thinks it's interesting to, you know, do something for the Lord every once in a while. But we're to be Christ followers. So that brings us to James chapter 2 then, in verse 18. Someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. Authentic faith is an active faith. That's one reason why in our church purpose statement, coming from Scripture, we don't only want to follow Christ as Savior, but we want to grow in Christ. And then our last part of our purpose statement is to show Christ to others, locally and globally, for God's glory. Because it's an active faith. It's something that will change from the inside out who we are and what we do. We read last week, Romans 12, 1 and 2. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies, what kind of sacrifice? A living sacrifice. And again, as I challenged last week, may it never become normal to us to think of Christianity as kind of a stagnant faith. You know, as we just came through Halloween weekend and saw a lot of morbid things in people's yards and skeletons and bones and death. May we never get used to the idea that, yeah, Christianity can kind of be just a dead, ritualistic, kind of just routine, just whatever maybe serves my purpose, faith. No, that's not at all what James is teaching us and emphasizing in this passage. We may present your bodies, Paul says in Romans, a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Then we come to a couple illustrations that James gives us. One is Abraham. We already saw how Abraham believed in God. It was counted to him as righteousness. But let's look how he acted upon that. Abraham's faith was evidenced by his works. First of all, one of the interesting things is that he was called a friend of God. He was called a friend of God. 2 Chronicles 20, I invite you to turn there to 2 Chronicles chapter 20 and verses 5 through 7. 2 Chronicles 20, verses 5 through 7. You know, the term friend is a very powerful term. And a true friend, a lifelong friend, is to be greatly valued. It's been a blessing to be able to observe some lifelong friends that have come or reached out or called and to come and visit my mom and to sit with her and to sit with my dad. And yesterday, a college friend of my dad came to visit. He and his wife came to sit and visit with my mom for a while. College friend. This was many, many years ago. My dad's not 25. I mean, it was many years ago. But it's a lifelong friend. Shortly after they left, three ladies that I've known since I was probably 11 also came. One of them was my elementary school principal. And I may have been the first time, I can't remember the last time I saw her, but Kathy, you know, I said, Kathy, good to see you. Oh, David, it's been a long time. It sure has. But lifelong friends. We see God calls, or Abraham is referred to as a friend of God in 2 Chronicles 20, verses 5 through 7. Jehoshaphat stood in the assembly of Judah and Jerusalem in the house of the Lord before the new court and said, O Lord, God of our fathers, are you not God in heaven? You rule over all the kingdoms of the nations. In your hand are power and might, so that none is able to withstand you. Did you not, our God, drive out the inhabitants of this land before your people Israel and give it forever to the descendants of Abraham, your friend? In Isaiah 41, and I'll just read it to you in verses 8 through 10, it says, But you, Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the offspring of Abraham, my friend. You, whom I took from the ends of the earth and called from its farthest corners, saying to you, you are my servant. I have chosen you and not cast you off. Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Abraham was called a friend of God, not because of his social status, of his wealth, you know, what he could contribute to God's project. No, he was called a friend of God because of his belief and because of his faith, because God had a special plan for him. Now, what's even more exciting to me is not just that Abraham was called a friend of God, but then in John says, we are called the friends of God. Look with me in John chapter 15, verses 14 and 15. John 15, verses 14 and 15. Something that's very ingrained in, and you see some of this also in American culture, but it's very, very prevalent in Brazilian culture, is that there are many benefits on who you know. And there was often times where I'd be talking with someone and they'd say, oh, I know someone that you should contact. And especially in the bureaucratic red tape, you know, processes of Brazil, it was always helpful if someone knew someone inside that could help facilitate the process that otherwise would take sometimes years to complete. We have an inside connection with God. Not just with a high-ranking authority, not with just someone who's rich, not with just someone maybe who's very talented. I was talking briefly with someone who went to the parade and went to the event at the stadium on Friday, and she said, boy, it was just neat, you know, as the players came in and, you know, we were there. And so we don't just have a connection with a professional baseball player, but with God himself. Look with me in John chapter 15, verses 14 and 15. You're my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. Now, there's a lot to unpack in that passage, and we'll save that maybe for another day, but to take from this is that we too can be called friends of God. It's not just Abraham. It's not just the father, you know, of Israel, the first true Jew. No, but it's we as Gentiles. We'll even see that in the person of Rahab. But we see that we can be called the friends of God. Abraham was called a friend of God, but also Abraham had lived a life of faith. Notice verse 22 of James chapter 2. Verse 22 of James chapter 2, it says, well, start in verse 21 rather. It says, was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up his son Isaac on the altar? You see that faith was active. And the way that verb is formed there indicates it wasn't just an event. It wasn't just, you know, a one-time thing, but it was a lifelong process that his faith was active along with his works, and faith was completed by his works. I thought it was interesting. One commentator he noticed a pattern, and he listed it this way from Hebrews chapter 11. Turn with me to Hebrews chapter 11, and we'll start in verse 8. Abraham had lived a life of faith. First of all, in Hebrews 11, he started out in faith. He started out in faith. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 8 says, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. Now, I want to really draw attention to this next phrase. And he went out not knowing where he was going. Now, I think, I need to go through this again, but I think our family, or Kim and I, have moved about 15, 16 times in our marriage because of church planning and coming back on furloughs. We've done a lot of moving. I came to church in a U-Haul truck today, and I felt like, boy, there's some good memories from this, but there's some really bad memories from this. Moving is kind of one of those things. But never once have I announced to my family, hey, we're moving, but I don't know where to. Imagine if I had done that at any given time. Hey, Kim, girls, Michael, we're going to move. The most logical question right after that is, where to? Oh, I don't know. What? Are you crazy? Abraham was just a man just like we are. Sarah was a woman just like you women. So I'm sure there was some thoughts of, okay, God's called us to move, but to a place where we don't even know. But yet he acted in faith. Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3 says, "Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation." Remember that phrase here in a minute. "And I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So God said he had a place, you know, that he was going to take Abram, but Abram wasn't aware. He wasn't knowledgeable. He couldn't even get on Google and do the street view and kind of check it out. Hey, hon, take a look at this. This is kind of where we're headed. He couldn't do that. But yet he started out by faith. He went out not knowing where he was going. That was definitely an act of faith. But not only that, he sojourned by faith. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 9, "By faith he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise." So that faith-filled decision of, okay, God's called us to move to a place where we're not really sure, but we're going to follow him, that initial decision is now being tested through a longer process. As they dwell, it says, as in a foreign land, he sojourned in faith. And then Hebrews 11, 17 through 19, he sacrificed in faith. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, "Through Isaac shall your offspring be named." He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. Now think with me for a minute. All the promises of Genesis 12, hey, I'm going to make of you a great nation, and in you all the nations will be blessed, suddenly seems to come into conflict from what God is now asking him to do. Take your only son, and I want you to offer him as a sacrifice. Now we get a little glimpse into kind of some of the thinkings in Abraham's brain. He was thinking even to the extent of, okay, maybe even if I do kill him, that God will raise him again. But on face value, God's request doesn't seem to go into the same pattern of his promise. I'm going to make of you a great nation, and from you all the nations will be blessed. But by the way, go kill your only son. Wow. Oftentimes, God will call us to do things and maybe even to give up some things that don't seem to fit within the plan that we thought God was working out. It was a struggle for me when we moved out of the city of São Paulo, 20 plus million people, and God seemed to be shutting that door. And that was one occasion. I remember specifically when I told my family, and Kim and I had prayed about it, but when we finally came to the decision and I mentioned to my family, hey, we're going to move out of São Paulo, and the girls started crying. I'm like, oh, Lord, help. It was a tough decision. So the people we knew, and we were ministering there, and we had churches there, but yet God seemed to be calling us out of the city of 20 million people to a city with one stoplight, Itupeva. I thought, God, what are you doing? Of 20 plus million people, and you call us out of that city that we thought we were going to spend many more years in to a city with one stoplight? 45,000 people? But yet we saw in the years after that, there were some very low times, some very difficult times, but yet it was one of the sweetest opportunities of ministry that God gave us. But yet for a time period, it didn't seem to match up with what God had shown before. And we had to be willing to give up and to say, okay, Lord, I don't completely understand all this, but it seems like you're closing this door and leading this way. Help us to follow. And I guarantee you, every one of you could say in your story some things that have happened or are happening, or if it hasn't happened yet, will happen, where you'll go, Lord, I don't quite understand this. I thought you were leading in this way, but yet, God, you seem to be shutting the door and leading me in this direction. What are you doing? But as Abraham, he started out in faith, he sojourned in faith, and he was willing to sacrifice in faith. He was willing to open his hands open and say, God, I don't completely understand, but I trust you. His faith, his life was evidenced by faith. And then we see that Abraham's faith was completed or brought to maturity by his works. James 2, 21 and 22. Was not Abraham, our father, justified by works when he offered up his son Isaac on the altar? You see that faith was active along with his works, and faith was completed by his works. So the end of that passage really explains that the kind of contradictory or seemingly contradictory phrase of justified by works. We sing about, we have in our creeds sometimes, you know, that it's only by faith alone. So James has, the book of James received a lot of criticism early on, because it seemed to be in conflict with Paul's teaching that salvation was by faith alone. But as we looked at last week, Paul emphasized prior to salvation, works do nothing. Yet James emphasizes after salvation, works are absolutely necessary to evidence what's happened in you. So in these verses we've just read, was not Abraham our father justified by works? And then in verse 22, you see that faith was active along with his works, and faith was completed, brought to maturity by his works. Well, we're going to spend a few minutes in Genesis 22. We'll start in verse 1 of Genesis 22. It says, after these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, here I am. He said, take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. Now, in between verse 2 and verse 3, we don't know all that happened. But there's no record here that Abraham called a family meeting. There's no record that Abraham consulted with Sarah. We men know that was risky. You take a son and you're going to go maybe sacrifice him. You don't even talk to your wife. But there's no record of that, and we can't know for sure. But in verse 3, automatically says, so Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac, and he cut the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Then notice this, kind of gives a glimpse of his faith. Then Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and then come again to you. Abraham fully expected to come back to those guys that were standing there with the stuff. He fully expected to come back with Isaac. But yet he was also ready to follow through to the end. Verse 7, I cannot really put myself in this position as a dad. I just can't imagine the emotion that I would have felt as a dad. In verse 7, and Isaac said to his father Abraham, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. Isaac said, behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? Abraham said, verse 8, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So they went, both of them, together. As a dad, in hearing my son say that, I would be like, wow, son, that was a tough question. Then we pick up in verse 9. They came to the place of which God had told him. Abraham built the altar, laid the wood in order, and then bound Isaac, his son. I mean, just a little bitty comparison to this is maybe taking your child after they've broken a bone or something, and you take him and you have to kind of hold him still for the doctor to set the bone. That's the only thing that I can kind of think of, you know, that you know it's going to be painful, but you've got to kind of, you know, hold your child. And here we see Abraham binding up and tying up his son, laid him on the altar on top of the wood. And Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. Man, this seems like wacko passage. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." And he said, "Here I am." He said, "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." From the moment that he first believed and it was counted to him as righteousness, this is many, many years later that now his faith is still evidencing. His faith was active from the beginning all the way through, even to the point of sacrificing in faith. But then, as many of you are familiar with the rest of the story, Abraham, verse 13, lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, him was a ram. Behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of that place, "The Lord will provide." And I guarantee you that Abraham and his son had a pretty powerful worship service, just the two of them. God will provide. This week, later this week, maybe even in here in the school, I know at Northwest Classical Academy, they're going to have a ceremony for veterans to recognize men and women who have served our country, recognize men and women who promised their loyalty, promised their dedication. Some of those men and women, I would say many of those men and women, were called upon during their years of service to really show evidence of that. At one point, it's a verbal commitment, but I'm sure many of those men and women came to points along their way in deployment or in war or whatever where they had to show it and complete their verbal commitment. Even in recent history, the Army creed is this: "I am an American soldier. I am a warrior and a member of a team. I serve the people of the United States and live the Army values. I will always place the mission first. I will never accept defeat. I will never quit. I will never leave a fallen comrade." Goes on to say, "I stand ready to deploy, engage, and destroy the enemies of the United States of America in close combat. I am a guardian of freedom and the American way of life. I am an American soldier." And thousands of American soldiers have quoted and memorized that very creed. Now, on August 26th of 2021, in recent, many of you remember the headlines, whether it was on the news or came up on your phone or even talking about in the workplace, the suicide attack in Kabul, Afghanistan. And there was a 23-year-old Army Staff Sergeant named Ryan Knoss from Canyon, Tennessee. And on that day, August 26th of 2021, what he had verbally devoted himself to came to completion when he lost his life serving the United States of America as well as people in Afghanistan trying to help them to flee the Taliban regime. But not only did Ryan show his devotion in that way, but 12 other service members. Most of them were 20, 22, 23. The oldest one, I believe, was 31. And many of them had devoted verbally, had said, you know, the creed verbally, that yes, I will do this. But on that day, it was evidenced. It was completed. It was shown to be true. In fact, Darren Hoover, 31, of Salt Lake City, Utah, was the oldest of those who died that day as a child. After the 9/11 attacks, he told his parents, "I will serve my country." And from a childhood dream and dedication all the way to 31 years old, he did serve as a child looking towards that dream, then as an adult doing it, and then giving his life. Marine Corps Sergeant Nicole G., 23-year-old, some of you may remember the picture of her holding a baby. And she even posted on Instagram, "I love my job." She's from Sacramento, California, and she lost her life on that day. Marine Corps Lance Corporal Riley McCollum, 20 years old, of Jackson, Wyoming, an expectant father, had verbally said, "I'm willing to fight, to serve, to protect," and that day it came to pass. And he did just that. Now, as Christians, whether we look at Abraham or even in a secular way, we look at soldiers, may we remember, boy, we are in a kingdom, we're in a spiritual warfare. We sing every Sunday, maybe throughout the week as we have our radio turned on, you know, Jesus is all in all and Jesus first. And then daily, what do our decisions show? Do we have an active faith that brings to completion, that is growing in maturity? Or do we just day in and day out sing and talk, but yet lack the action? I pray that like Abraham, that we will show that our faith is active. There's another example that Rahab was given as an example. I thought it was interesting how one commentator made the following kind of comparisons. Abraham was a patriarch. Rahab was a prostitute. Abraham was moral. She was immoral. Abraham was the first Jew. Rahab was a Gentile. But yet we see in this passage that Rahab also evidenced her faith by her works. Join with me in Joshua chapter 2. Joshua chapter 2 and verse 1. Joshua chapter 2 and verse 1, it says, "Joshua the son of Nun sent two men secretly from Shittim as spies, saying, 'Go view the land, especially Jericho.' And they went and came into the house of a prostitute whose name was Rahab and lodged there. And it was told to the king of Jericho, 'Behold, men of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land.' Then the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, 'Bring out the men who have come to you, who entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land.'" But this is where what she has heard about this God of Israel, now she begins to put into practice this act of faith. "But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them, and she said, 'True, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. When the gate was about to be closed at dark, the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them.' But she had brought them up to the roof and hid them with the stalks of flax that she had laid in order on the roof. So the men pursued after them on the way to the Jordan as far as the fords, and the gate was shut as soon as the pursuers had gone out." Now jump to verse 15 of Joshua chapter 2. "Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, so that she lived in the wall. And she said to them, 'Go into the hills, or the pursuers will encounter you, and hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Then afterward you may go your way.' The men said to her, 'We will be guiltless with respect to this oath of yours that you have made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, you shall tie the scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And you shall gather into your house your father and mother, your brothers, and all your father's household. Then if anyone goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head. But if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be guiltless with respect to your oath that you have made us swear.' And she said, 'According to your words, so be it.' Then she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window." Now, I've heard this story since I was a kid. I've seen it on flannel graphs. I've seen it on Betty Lukens. I've seen it on, you know, on videos. But may we not miss really the urgency here and the faith that Rahab evidenced. The king knew the men had come to her house, yet she willingly and risked her life really in hiding them. She knew that she still could have been questioned. And I don't think the king would have spared her life if he had found that she was lying. She was taking a huge risk because she believed that their God was the God of all heavens and earth. In Matthew 1, in verse 1, we see Rahab even in the lineage of Jesus. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham, and then goes on to verse 5. And Salmon, the father of Boaz by Rahab. And Boaz, the father of Obed by Ruth, and Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of David, the king. That's a special place. That Rahab, not a patriarch, not a Jew, not a moral person, but a prostitute, a Gentile, an immoral, but through God's work in her life, she believed by faith that the God of Israel would be her God. And she evidenced it by her works. I want to invite you to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. Many of us know Hebrews 11 as the hall of faith, the faith chapter. But one pastor called it the hall of works. Or in essence, the hall of faith equals the hall of works. Authentic faith equals an active faith. Notice with me in a couple of verses that we see in Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11, 4, by faith Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice. Hebrews 11, 7, by faith Noah, it goes on to say, constructed an ark for the saving of his household. Hebrews 11, 20, by faith Isaac invoked future blessings on Jacob. Hebrews 11, 22, by faith Joseph, it goes on to say, made mention. Hebrews 11, 24, by faith Moses, we see here that he chose rather to be mistreated with the people of God. Then Hebrews 11, 29, by faith the people crossed the Red Sea as on dry land. So yes, it's the hall of faith, but we see accompanied with the hall of faith, just as James is emphasizing, you can't separate the two. You can't say that I have faith and not have works. Just as we also illustrated last week, you can't have a bird that has, you know, one wing of faith. You have to have the other wing of works. Faith is enough for salvation, but faith will certainly produce works for God's glory. Look with me in John chapter 15 as we close. John chapter 15, and we'll look at verse 1. What I want to challenge you is not to just think about this as kind of a historical lesson about Abraham and about Rahab, but to remember that these passages, and then also this passage in John, challenges us. In November of 2021, with a little less than 2 months left of this year, to live an active faith for God's glory. And John 15 says, I am the vine, the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes. Sometimes that hurts. Sometimes it's those calls to sacrifice that we don't quite understand. But the reason is this, that it may bear more fruit. Now, if you're like me, my tendency is to say, God, I'm really satisfied, okay? I'm okay with the fruit I'm producing right now. I'd rather avoid the pruning. Now, if you give me pruning shears, I love it. I love to cut, but I don't like to be cut. But it says God does it that we may bear more fruit. Already you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me and I in you, as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Then in verse 8 of John 15, by this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples. It's not just James, but John also, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, says, this is what glorifies God the Father. This is what brings joy to God the Father, is that you and I bear much fruit. And then he goes on to say, and so prove then to be my disciples. Verse 16, you did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. In Matthew 13, 8, the sower of the seed, we'll see in verse 23, and I'll read it quickly. As for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who hears the word and understands it. He indeed bears fruit. It doesn't say maybe. It doesn't say, you know, if he's a strong Christian, he's going to bear fruit. He says, no, he indeed bears fruit and yields in one case 100-fold, in another 60, and in another 30. Galatians 5, 22 through 25, it talks about the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness. Gives the idea that this is a natural growth process. It doesn't say some Christians, you know, will evidence love, and other Christians might even have some kindness. It says, no, the fruit of the Spirit is these things. It is love. And then out of love, we see all the other fruits of the Spirit. In Galatians, in the end of that passage, Galatians chapter 5 and verse 25, it says, if we live by the Spirit, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. If we live by the Spirit, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. We had a great time Friday night. We went to Altoona High School. Our neighbor plays the flute in the marching band, and we've been wanting to see her a game and see her participate. And I love watching football, especially high school football. It's fun, and I can identify with that more than NFL for sure. So we show up to Altoona High School. I'm amazed when I drive into campus. I've been in front of it but never been in, and it looks like we're in a college campus. I mean, huge buildings, and there's parking, you know, everywhere, and we walk into the stadium, turf field, and the huge stadium, concession stands on both sides. Very different from my private Christian school back in the day. And so we walk up, and we sit with our neighbor, and Sanaya is about 20 feet from us, you know, playing her flute in the band. And then during halftime, all the band goes down onto the field, and it takes a while to kind of get them set up, and parents and other volunteers are helping, and then they start their show. And as they do their show, I'm going to guess maybe 60 people strong in the marching band, all in step as they play their instruments, the tubas, the flutes, you know, all these things, and they keep in step with each other as they move around the field and do their different formations that they've practiced hours and hours and hours. And none of them, I'm sure, wants to be the one that kind of gets out of step and makes, you know, the tuba people trip. They all want to keep in step. And Paul in Galatians says, listen, as a Christian, the fruit of the Spirit, it's these things. It's not just for some to pursue, but it's for all of us to pursue. And then it's kind of a wrap-up challenge. He says, if we live by the Spirit, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. May your authentic faith and true faith evidence it by how you walk, by how you talk, by how you respond to other people, by how you love your family and your coworkers, and how you treat your teachers and how you interact with your neighbors. May you keep in step with the Spirit. We've been challenged, I've mentioned this to you before, but we've been challenged by the book Daring Devotion. Matt Conrad, a missionary in Hong Kong with Biblical Ministries Worldwide, wrote the book during kind of the COVID quarantine, and he highlights 31 individuals, missionaries, in fairly recent history. So we're not talking about, you know, Paul and Peter and John, but some fairly recent missionaries, wives, singles, families, who showed not only a verbal commitment, but showed by their life that their authentic faith was certainly an active faith. And for some of them, it led to death. For others, it led to losing some children on the field. For others, it meant leaving their homes and their culture and their comforts. Daring devotion. Matt and Jessica Harden went by faith to India. is we had a chance to visit them a few years ago, and then not long after, they had to leave quickly because they were unable to renew their visas, but they went by faith and lived and served in a very different setting. Now, I've heard several times, and it's a very challenging song. It's a simple song, kind of a fun song, but I challenge you to listen to it sometime. And it says, dream small. Dream small. And I don't have the words in front of me, but God just brought it to my mind again. But basically, the idea of the song is, God doesn't call all of us to go across the world. He's not going to call all of us to go to a time zone 12 hours different than ours. But God does want us to dream small in the sense of, don't lose the worth of day in and day out living faithfully for God in whatever He's called you to do. The song talks about, you know, pastors in rural areas who faithfully serve their communities and their churches. It talks about moms who day in and day out disciple their own children, who dads who day in and day out pray and lead their own families. It's not always just the big dreams. Man, we're going to change the world for Christ. So often it's, God, help me day in and day out. Help me to stay focused. Help me in what you've called me to do, to live an authentic faith and to live an active faith for your glory.